Now, come on now, tell me that you have. I know that you have. Have you not wondered, what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose of my existence? Or what is God's will for me? If there is a God, what would God's will for me be? Our religion has told us that we live on the earth for a brief period, and that if we become good enough, long enough, or perhaps Christian enough, we would then in time escape from the earth by being taken by God to a place called heaven to be with God, and our presence there would be a reward for the measure of our Christian goodness. But we have also been told that falling short, we would be excommunicated from any conscious contact with God and exiled to a place called hell, probably to burn forever. Now, under the rules laid down and the logistics involved, the odds for any one individual making it into heaven are unbelievably low. As a matter of fact, you can predict with absolute accuracy that about 4/5 of the population of the earth at any one time will not get there. And we're talking about several billion people who cannot have that experience. You also discover that the chances of ending up in hell are depressingly high. That in all probability, you will make it. And most of the folks you know will be there. Fortunately, no such system is to be found anywhere in the Bible. And certainly Jesus Christ never ever taught such an idea. You simply cannot find this heaven-hell system in his teaching. And I am quite certain that if this was a part of his master system, he would have stated it precisely, because this is a very important concept that we're talking about. What you do find in the scriptures in general and in Jesus' teaching in particular is the concept of two levels of thought consciousness existing simultaneously in every person on this planet. But the majority of the race is tuned into the lower of these levels of thought vibrations. This level of thought is called the earth in the Bible, and the person whose identity is in the earth is the natural man, the mortal or the physical person. The scriptures say whose breath is in his nostrils. We would think of that person as being the intellectual self of us. Jesus said that in the earth is trial and tribulation. And he was talking about that when we live from, when we are identified with this first or lowest level of our human experience, that we experience problems. But rarely do we experience solutions. But he taught the good news, and the good news is, lo, the kingdom of God or the kingdom of the heavens is at hand. It is in you. It is in you now. That both states of mind exist simultaneously in every person. We have also been told that in heaven, one experiences freedom, health, happiness, prosperity, and most importantly, a conscious contact with God, the creative spirit of the universe. After all, is heaven not where God is? Then if the spirit of God is everywhere, then God is not in any one place. God is every place. And so heaven must not be a place, but it must be the state of beingness in which and from which any one person will experience the presence of God that is everywhere. Our purpose for being on earth is to escape into heaven, or to move from the lower consciousness of the physical, purely intellectual person into the higher consciousness of our spiritual or Christ identity. While earth and heaven represent two states of being, there are many levels represented in each state of consciousness. Remember when Jesus said, the least one in the kingdom of heaven is greater than John the Baptist, and he was implying that John the Baptist, as as fine as he was, had not yet achieved self-mastery. Oh, and let me ask you, today, have you not experienced more than one level or state of consciousness in the course of the day? Sometimes within moments or even minutes of each other. Perhaps driving along, listening to beautiful music in your automobile and caught up in the feeling, the reverie of it, you were just really feeling great and someone cut in front of you and a little hell broke loose. You know, it doesn't take long to go from heaven to hell. Or perhaps you remembered what some person had done to disappoint you. Or it's quite possible that that one to whom you have given your life left you. And so you no longer have a life, you think. And you are brought down to the very lowest thoughts and feelings and vibration. But the master teacher said, he that is within you is greater than he that is in the world, meaning this inner higher self is greater than that part of us that is identified with the world and the things of the world. Notice that our intellectual self is identified through and with outer things. Most of us have not yet become very good at discovering and becoming identified with our more perfect, higher nature. Now, there's some more good news for each one of us, and that is that your life situation and my life situation is perfectly designed for us to use to make this transition in consciousness. That's why you're on earth and in your present situation. Your situation, or in some instances, we might call it a predicament. Sometimes the worst things that happen to us are designed by life to get our attention and to cause us to begin this process of making our adjustment, to take charge of our minds, to take charge of the process of thought and feeling. And it's important to know that your life is a laboratory and conditions for you are perfect. So many times we want to be in some other place, in some other time, in some other situation, so that we can grow or be changed. You are in the perfect place. But now let's come back to the Lord's Prayer. Remember that the Lord's Prayer is the summation of the Jesus Christ thought system. And when properly understood and used, it will help anyone at any time in any of life's emergencies to make this transition in thought and feeling from the earth of us to the heaven of us. And let me say at this point, too, that we live in a universe that is based on principles or universal law, and those universal principles apply everywhere in the universe, not just here on this planet. There's not one set of rules that exist that are planetary and another set that are solar, meaning that have to do with the sun, and other rules that exist in some far parts of the universe. A principle is applicable everywhere in the universe. And not only that, but every principle is applicable to every person who exists everywhere. An example would be the law of gravity. You know that the law of gravity makes no exceptions, does it? The law of gravity does not take into account one's spiritual condition or lack of it. If you jump off of a three-story building, you will experience the consequences of jumping off of that three-story building. And you may plead ignorance. You may say, I didn't know it was a three-story building. The law of gravity just smiles. Or you may say, I'm a very important person. The law of gravity will smile even more broadly, I'm sure. Or you may say, I'm a very religious person, but the cracking sound that you hear will probably be your ankle. We live in a universe of principle. And religion is about, or is supposed to be about, principles. The Jesus Christ system is not an arbitrary system of thoughts or principles that are designed for some small segment of the human race and do not fit other persons. All religious principles are universal principles, or they are not truths at all. Now, it's very important to know, because what we're dealing with in the Lord's Prayer, when it's properly understood and used, will help us, will help anyone at any time in any of life's emergencies, because we're dealing with principles, not just arbitrary rules or religious concepts. We're dealing with laws that always work, and they will work for any person, regardless of their religious background or present belief system, or lack therefore of. And these principles are designed to produce the perfect relationship between that person and the solution they need in their present life situation. And the point I'm making there is that if you and I can begin to understand and work with these principles, you will see an instantaneous and dramatic change take place in your world. These are principles that cause things to happen in the most astonishing and rewarding and self-fulfilling way. So let's continue our study of the Lord's Prayer with the next phrase or clause that we were coming to, which is, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." And what this means is, as or in the manner or to the degree that we forgive those persons who trespass against us. In our first three lessons, we established the nature of God, the perfect, benevolent parent, and also the nature of mankind, the worthy, recipient child. That's you and me. And recipient means one who receives or who is receptive. Now, in this lesson this evening, that worthy recipient child, namely you and me, takes a giant step forward and upward in consciousness, stepping out of the law of cause and effect, which has been called the law of karma, meaning karma really means comeback. That's what the word karma means. Everything that we send out comes back. And every person living under the law of cause and effect, and that's our normal human condition, will always experience the consequences of their actions. Always, no exceptions. That's the law. And Jesus Christ was talking about how to come out from under that law and enter into a higher law, a law of cause and effect. What this means is that you and I don't even really have to do something. All we have to do is think it, and it happens. We don't even have to break up the furniture. All we have to do is have a bad attitude that would break up the furniture, and in time, we will experience the consequences of our attitude. It all comes back. Most of what we have experienced in our lives is what is coming back to us. It looks like it's coming at us. It's coming back to us. That law, that principle, has also been called the law of justice. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, the Old Testament called it. Well, a number of years ago, I discovered that there's another law. It's called the law of mercy or love or of regeneration. And I found out that so many of my problems were the result of living under this law of justice, and what I was experiencing was the consequences of my own unacceptable behavior, unacceptable emotional responses to life, unacceptable thoughts, feelings, as well as actions. And can you imagine my elation when I discovered one day that I could change all of that in the twinkling of an eye? Well, maybe not quite that quickly, but in a week or two, or if I really worked on it, maybe in 6 months. But that it would change. If I would be changed, then my world would be changed. No one ever promised us that before, did they? Oh, yes, that promise has been there. Every time that you have prayed the Lord's Prayer, it has been there. It's been inherent in that statement that this change could take place. When our consciousness is changed, behold, the old has passed away and the new appears, because the Lord's Prayer is not so much of, and the Jesus Christ belief system is not so much about changing outer things, as it is changing where I am inside myself, even as I work on outer things. Did you follow what I'm saying? Suppose that you don't like your job, or suppose that you have a physical problem that is very serious and that might even deprive you of your physical life. It's got your attention. Something has your attention. The system that we're talking about is not designed to change conditions where you work, and is not so much designed either to change your physical condition, but while you are working where you work, you change your reaction, your response, your feelings, your attitude, a new state of mind. It's difficult to do some days, isn't it? Much is asked, but also much is given. And as we work with our mind, the most remarkable thing happens. Conditions change. And even if they don't, it doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with us, because we will be changed. We will no longer be in that place under those circumstances once we get the hang of changing our response mechanism, or in the matter that concerns the body. Surrendering the fear, coming to understand that I cannot lose my life, and therefore I'm not working to lose my life, but I'm working within my own mind to change my responses to this present condition. Getting a feeling for the presence of God and knowing that I am an individualized expression, and coming to have a real awakening and awareness of my true nature. It is astonishing what happens to any person who changes their belief system. And the law of mercy or the law of love can cancel the past. And the old will be passed away. And behold, the new appears. But the new cannot appear until there is a new response from me. Until I am in this upper room of myself. The new consciousness and its resultant experiences are from above, from our spiritual nature. And in order for this to happen, all that is past must be forgiven or given up. See, we're back to the statement in the Lord's Prayer, and forgive us our debts, forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. The word forgive means to pardon, which means to absolve, which means to excuse, and which means to renounce all anger or resentment against, to free the offender from the consequences of his actions. Do you mean that it's necessary for me to forgive persons and to forgive the past if I wish to have what I want? Absolutely. It's essential. If a person deeply accepts the consciousness of forgiveness, life instantly becomes a no-fault experience, a no-blame and a no-guilt state of being. And I want you to know that the human intellect can hardly bear this concept. Our lower self has built a very careful case against all the persons who are responsible for its unhappiness or disappointment and failure. And check it out. There was a time in my life when I had a list of names, probably longer than all of you who are present tonight listening to me. And they were the people that had caused my life to not be what I wanted it to be. I knew who they were. And I knew that I was absolutely right in my attitude toward them, because they had done those things, they had said those things. Oh, I may have exaggerated a little bit, but even when I exaggerated, I was not too far from wrong. You understand what I'm saying, don't you? I had their number. What did holding them in that judgment have to do with me when I was righteous in my indignation and self-righteous in my anger? It was the single most destructive activity that I ever entered into. And of course, I did not know it. And one day, after I had a spiritual awakening and was feeling so good that I could hardly stand it, and right in the middle of that feeling, a voice spoke to me and said, and some of you have heard this often repeated story, but for the sake of an example for this evening, you must hear it again. That voice said, "But you haven't forgiven Garnet." Garnet was my brother-in-law. And of course I hadn't forgiven Garnet. I never was going to forgive Garnet. No one else would forgive Garnet if they knew Garnet like I did. And the voice said, "Well, you will forgive Garnet." And I said, "I will not." And we argued a bit. And then the magic words were spoken. "Forgiving Garnet is not for him, it is for you." And I knew it. I believed it. I understood it. But even so, I was reluctant to enter into it, because when you have disliked someone that intensely that long, you don't want to give it up. You won't have any fun anymore if you give up. And besides, they might just walk all over you if you forgive them. The thought came to me, "Forgive him, all right. If I can still hold it against him, I'll forgive him." Don't tell me that you have never thought that forgiveness means that you can make a long list of all of the things that you have against that person. That's what forgiveness is. It is a legal pad full of statements that you go to him and say, "Now this is what I want to forgive you for." That's not forgiveness at all. Forgiveness erases all the things on the legal pad. It doesn't mean that they did not happen. Of course they happened, many of them. They were not all in our imagination. And of course there were people who took advantage of us, but they did so usually with our own permission. Who invited them into my life and your life? We did, didn't we? Forgiveness also requires that we forgive the most hardened offender for the worst thing that person has ever done, giving up our reaction to it. Now let me make one statement. It does not mean that we, from that moment forward, are shackled and must always accept the unacceptable behavior of other persons. Absolutely not. It's the first time that we can come free of the unacceptable behavior. Unacceptable behavior should never be accepted by us, from ourselves, or from other persons. I'm talking about an inner response that sets us free and gives us new choice and a new strength. And it puts us in a different place. It puts us in a different dimension of mind. Forgiveness is to give up all mental and emotional responses that are self-defeating, and to be as though that experience had not happened. Listen to these words from the 11th chapter of Mark. They're very important. Jesus said, "If you only have faith in God..." Let me pause for a moment and say, faith in God does not mean that you believe that God exists. That's not faith in God at all. Faith in God is a working relationship. You and I have a working relationship with each other. We communicate intelligently and respond in a loving way. If you only have a working relationship with God, this is the absolute truth. You can say to this Mount of Olives, rise up and fall into the Mediterranean. You can say to any mountainous problem that you have. You can say to any condition over which you seem to have had no control, rise up out of my life and fall away from me, and your command will be obeyed. All that's required is that you really believe and have no doubt. All that's required is that you really believe and have no doubt. Now, how could this possibly happen to a person who has not spent a great deal of time taking charge of their thoughts and feelings? Really believing and having no doubt implies that we have changed our belief system. We have worked, we've moved out of our earthy self, and we've been moving toward our more heavenly or spiritual self. Now let's continue with what the lesson says. Listen to me, exclamation point. You can pray for anything, italics, for emphasis. And if you believe, italics, you have it. It's yours. You can pray for anything, and if you believe, you have it. It's yours. It's incredible, isn't it? But wait a minute. I left out the hooker. It's coming. But when you're praying, first forgive anyone you're holding a grudge against, so that your Father in heaven will forgive you your shortcomings, too. We are forgiven or set free as we forgive or release all others from the blame that we've imposed upon them. And you know, this is one of the most amazing things in all of life. We have been given the ability to decide or to choose the set of rules that we shall play the game of life by. The lower rules of mankind that restrict or bind or punish, the law of karma or of comeback, the law of justice, or we can choose at any moment to play by the higher set of rules in which we are set free, in which all debts are canceled, in which we are functioning from a higher state of thinking and feeling, in which we have options and insights that were not available just a moment before, and all that we have to do, and it's the turning point of the spiritual life, is to forgive all other persons and ourselves. And there can be no exceptions. You can't hold out and have your garnet. I'd forgiven all the rest of them, but I wanted to cling to what that one person had done. Well, this is an incredible statement or revelation of the truth. And the time comes when we are faced with a dilemma. We're caught in a trap. If we want to have our heart's desires, if we want to have all the things that we wish for ourselves and would like to share with other persons, then forgiveness must be extended to all other persons and to ourselves. And most of us find that we must force ourselves without any conceivable possibility of escape or evasion or mental reservation or subterfuge of any kind to forgive, to release the past. And you know that no human being can ever walk forward into a truly meaningful spiritual experience until forgiveness takes place. And that usually only happens in a moment of surrender. Well, and when I was faced with that dilemma, and the voice was speaking to me and I was talking back, I thought, well, after my argument was growing weaker by the moment, I thought, well, I've got the gimmick that will work. And I said to the presence of God that I was experiencing, I don't know how to forgive him. That sounded pretty good to me. I don't know how to forgive him. I would do it if I could, but I don't know how. That's like a child speaking to a parent. I would mow the grass, but I don't know how to start the lawnmower. Well, I'll show you how to start the lawnmower. And it starts. And God is not about to let us off the hook, because that voice said to me, take Alan, your youngest child, whom I loved, into your arms and love him. Get the feeling going. And when the feeling is so strong that you can hardly bear it, then switch it to Garnet. And I did. And it quit. And I said, see, it doesn't work. That's it. It doesn't work. And I was instructed to try again and again, as long as it took, until it worked. And days passed, and I practiced it rigidly and diligently. And finally, one day, it did almost work. And in that moment, I became aware that Garnet was just like I was, that he could not help the things that he had done. And I forgave him. It was not a thing that I had to do. It was something that just happened. It melted. All blame melted. He was my brother. And if I could have put my arms around him, I would have. If I could have put my arms around him without him knowing it, I would have. Later, I would have done it, even if he knew it. And I went to him and made my amends to him without mentioning one thing that was on my list. As a matter of fact, my long list was torn up when I made my amends. It was one of the great days of my life, because from that day to this, I've never had that deep-seated resentment, a feeling of animosity toward any human being. Do you know how freeing that is? That is life's greatest gift, but it is a gift that cannot be given to you. It is a gift that you must give to yourself, and it is a gift that you deserve. And it is not for the Garnet that's in your life. It is for you. But having forgiven all others, and particularly that special one, you must be prepared to forgive yourself too. For to refuse to forgive yourself is only spiritual pride. And that's all that it is. And I would ask you now, what have you ever done that is so extreme that you can't forgive yourself for it? Who do you think you are if all the rest of us have to do it that you won't? We all are part of the same cloth. And it's very important. One of our great moments is when we can look in that mirror and say to the person that you see there, I love you and I forgive you. I realize you've done the very best you possibly could under the circumstances that have existed in your life. And I've done that. And I do it often. I practice it with some regularity, because I might lose the hang of it if I don't. And I don't want to lose the feeling of it. And to forgive yourself does not mean that you don't recognize the mistakes that you make along the way, or that you absolve yourself from them. It means that you cancel those mistakes and that you make your amends when necessary. It is just a powerful statement of being that the Master Teacher has given us. There's no substitute for you and me taking charge of our own thought process, taking charge of our own minds, becoming aware of what exists within us, setting ourselves free from those self-defeating mechanisms. The next phrase, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And this clause in the Lord's Prayer has probably caused more difficulty than any other part of it. There are many sincere people who found this to be a veritable stumbling block. They feel that God could not lead anyone into temptation or into evil in any circumstances, so these words do not ring true. What this statement points out is that when you or I or anyone becomes involved in the spiritual life, when you begin to grow and to change, you become more sensitive to things, don't you? To the feelings of other persons and to where you are inside yourself. And Have you not discovered that you could get away with things a year ago that you cannot possibly get away with today? A year ago, you could awaken on any morning. It didn't need to be Monday. You could awaken on any day with a bad attitude toward life and hang on to it and cling to it, perhaps, and believe in it. Didn't seem to make a whole lot of difference. Try it now. See what happens. There was a time when you could, maybe not you, but some of us, you could file an income tax return that was very favorable to you, knowing full well that that's not what the truth was. Didn't bother you at all. Well, if you got caught, it bothered you, but try it now. There was a time when you could tell a lie, just a flat-out, barefaced lie. Remember when you could? Not blink an eye unless you got caught. And then if you got caught, you always had one that backed it up. Remember those good old days? Well, they were not good old days at all. But when you become spiritually sensitive, you can't do those things. You get caught. You get entrapped. Something happens. The consequences are clearer and sharper and quicker. And sometimes there's a feeling that this is an injustice. It's not at all. It is the law of mercy working in our behalf. And what this really means is that you've become a student of the truth, a student of life, and that you're making progress. Let me give an example that probably all of us can understand, and particularly if you have been either a teacher or an excellent student in any field. A teacher who has an outstanding student requires more of that student than of any other person in the class. Is that true? That's always true. You expect more and you require more because that student is capable of giving more, and you will not let them settle for less than they can give. You will not do it if you're a good teacher. And life requires more of us who have been given more. More of us who have a deeper wealth of understanding. More is required. And I can tell you something else. Next month or next year, even more will be required of you. And so, God, stay on top of me. Keep reminding me. Cause me to be aware of this great reality. Keep me from falling short. Keep me from trying to settle for less than what I would settle for. Let me not be tempted to fall short of what I know to be the truth. Deliver me from that evil that I would impose upon myself. Evil meaning falling short of my potential. I'm a student. I know how the system works. Now help me to practice it. I have the ability to achieve great heights. Now cause me to practice. Let me sit at the piano of my life and rehearse so that on an ongoing basis my performance will be superior. Not superior to my brothers and my sisters, but superior to my own performance. That's what that phrase in the prayer means. And it means that even if we pray it or not, that when you enter the spiritual life, this will become your experience. The teacher, the great teacher, who loves and cares and caresses and nurtures, will no longer let you be ordinary, will no longer let you be the average of the norm. But from this day forward, you will be required to excel and to exceed and to share and to give and to love and to eliminate on an ongoing basis all things that would separate you from the kingdom of higher beingness. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. This is a wonderful short expression of a general truth. It sums up the essential fact of the omnipresence, the omniscience, and the omnipotence of God. It means that I know, that we know, that God is indeed all in all. It's a statement in which we become aware, and we make our statement that everything that is happening is really for our good, because you, God, are the cause and you are the effect. The power that permits me to move these fingers is your power that is in me. The intelligence that I use that caused me to reach and to touch and to be able to write or to perceive or to understand or to experience is but your power. I recognize you in all things. I recognize you as the source of my good, but I also recognize you in the world around me. It is you I see and my fellows. Your presence is everywhere. It is you who wrote the music that touches my soul. Oh yes, the composer's name is well known, but it was you that wrote it. But it is you who plays it. Yes, the violinist and the pianist who express so beautifully that score are but expressions of you. And so when I hear that music, I'm hearing you. And it is you, my very spirit, that feels that music. You are the life of my life. And everywhere that I look, I behold you. And you are in and all around and with me. Remember in Jonathan Livingston Seagull, that story by Richard Bach, that was not about a seagull at all, but was about you and me and our own higher nature. Listen to what Jonathan said when he was speaking to Fletcher Lynn Seagull. Fletch, your whole body from wingtip to wingtip is nothing more than your thought itself in a form you can see. Break the chains of your thought and you break the chains of your body too. But no matter how Jonathan said it, it sounded like pleasant fiction. You see, Jonathan spoke of very simple things. That it is right for a gull to fly. That freedom is the very nature of his being. That whatever stands against that freedom must be set aside, be it ritual or superstition or limitation in any form, or even religion. Set aside, came a voice from the multitude, even if it be the law of the flock. The only true law is that which leads to freedom, Jonathan said. There is no other. How do you expect us to fly as you fly, came another voice. You are special and gifted and divine above other birds. Look at Fletcher, look at Lowell, look at Judy Lee, said Jonathan. Are they also special and gifted and divine? No more than you are, no more than I am. The only difference, the very only one, is that they have begun to understand what they really are and have begun to practice it. Jesus understood who he really was and practiced the principles in all of his affairs. And the result was amazing, astonishing. He was able to achieve a predetermined, a predicted result in life. But he also understood who we are. And sometimes we, like Fletcher Lynn Seagull, want to think of him and others as being more divine than we, more exceptional than we. This is merely our way of copping out. The only difference, the very only one, is that he and they have begun to understand what they really are and have begun to practice it. But so have we. So have we. Thine is the kingdom, the power, glory, forever. That's the way it really is.